This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Staub Audio Engineering. If you have listened to any of the episodes, you have undoubtedly heard me talk about Mike and the phenomenal audio engineering work that he does. His mixes and masters are truly some of the best that I've ever heard. I love working with Mike on all of our Dreamfield tunes, on all of our Summit One tunes. He is an absolute wizard. Make sure to hit him up, inquire about mixing and mastering prices, and take your tracks to the next level. Oh, yeah. And Mike is also one of the nicest, kindest human beings you'll ever meet. Definitely hit him up and work with him.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all of the producers, artists, and creators that are tuning into the show. My name is Cody Christensen, and you are listening to the Chilled Samples Podcast.
Welcome to the podcast, my friend. I'm super stoked to be sitting here screen to screen with you. And I have to kick this off by letting you know that Old School Vibe is one of the most special tracks that I've ever been a part of. It really is, man. And
no, 100.
Yeah, it really is. And so I can't believe that we've never, I mean, that track's almost 2 years old. It is 2 years old at this point. Jeez. So it baffles me that that we've never, I mean, we've shared some DMs, but we've never actually hopped on like a FaceTime. So this is a special moment for me, man. So Chase, thanks for being willing to hop on a podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually kind of crazy that we've never gotten on a call like this. It's always through the connections that we've made. But no, Old School Vibe, I mean, legendary process on that. And we kind of knew what we were developing. And then, dude, when you put the sax, it's like, done. I mean, that's the final on that.
Dude, it turned into a timeless track. It really did. And I don't want to toot our own horns, right? But I've been a part of a lot of songs and a lot of projects. But that song is special to me. And then it's special for like so many of my friends or family or like people from my hometown community. That's a song that they can all resonate with and love. You know, if I'm making dubstep, there's a very small subset of my hometown network that's going to appreciate that music. Lo-fi, I can get a little bit more, but Old School Vibe is a track that they can listen to. And they're like, hey, this is like a radio song. Like this is
100%
good.
You're talking about easy listening, you know, sounds that everybody can enjoy, that kind of uplifting. And then, you know, with a combined of lyrics that are just easy, they're easy to understand. You can put yourself in a moment on that track, you know, in any regard. And I mean, what's crazy is I don't even know if you know this, that song, like I wrote that to another instrumental and I got kicked off that instrumental.
Wow.
Yeah. And then that's when it was with D and another guy. And he said, this guy doesn't really have the energy that I want. And D-Rock was like, well, let's just make a track because this track needs to be made.
Yeah.
So that's when we reached out to, you know, Jeremiah for some guitar. And then we reached out to you to get that final just spice on it. Here we are.
That's so wild, too, because that was the first time that I linked up with D-Rock. That song and that process was the first time that I shared communications with Derek. And of course that's turned into we've had a beautiful relationship over the past 2 years since then, man. So it was pretty crazy just how we ended up getting in touch. And it was, and then all of a sudden, like we got linked up through a mutual friend, and then I got this kid from Long Island calling me all the time wanting sax. I'm like, what do you want, man? And I remember, I forget, it must have been an early draft because I don't even think your vocals were necessarily on it. Because when he sent me the track, I think it might have just been like some of Jeremiah's parts and like just a very rough production. And I was like, sure, man, yeah, I'll throw some sax on, like no problem. And then I think the next iteration that I got back had your vocals and the production had been spiced up. And I was like, oh, okay, this is a tune. And there's something, I mean, the lyrics and I've been in Colorado for almost a decade at this point, but I grew up on a farm in Iowa, and there's something even reminiscent about the lyrics, you know, like with the ripped jeans on, like,
right.
It's what a tune, man. I'm honored to have been a part of it, and what a I'm stoked that we get to have that track to listen to for the rest of our lives.
For real. And I mean, can we just call it how it is? I mean, Derek, so you met him the exact same time frame that I met him. So Derek reached out to me on Instagram, and I remember back then I was you know, younger, and I was still like perceiving like check marks and stuff and like social presence. So I was like, dang, a verified profile is hitting me up. And now I know who it is. And I'm like,
you're like, it's just Derek, man.
It's just freaking Derek. but no, so he hit me up, and to be honest, and I give a ton of credit, to the position that I'm in right now in terms of top lining and whatnot, to Derek, because Derek was the first person that I did a top line for. Mm. And so that was Runaway. And then we did that track. And then Old School Vibe was the second track that we did. But I mean, yeah, Derek was, I mean, you know, I love that guy to death. You know, he's got his quirks and he knows it. But I mean, we've developed an amazing relationship, and it's because of him and, you know, his network and kind of the expansion on my mindset. Because I was so focused on doing my thing. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, collaborate.
Totally. Yeah.
And dude, it changed my entire career.
Yeah.
100%.
And Chase, that's awesome to hear, just that collaboration aspect, because before I jumped into the chill hop lo-fi scene, I mean, we were for Crystal Grid in like our early years, we were doing collaborative tracks with vocalists, and we had a team. We had a videographer, a photographer, a manager, just a fantastic network of support. So we were definitely collaborating from that perspective, but it wasn't until I jumped into the lo-fi chill hop scene that I really saw the benefits of ultra collaborations. Like this morning when I'm going through my DMs, like I probably check tracks from like five different artists that I'm working with.
Yeah.
And it, when everybody's in that mindset together, you can accomplish so much more.
Without
when you're
doubt.
Delegating tasks, and Derek is undoubtedly, he taught me that as well. And then having the opportunity to play, I don't know, I think I played like nine or 10 shows with him over the spring, and to see his work from the marketing perspective and the business perspective.
Yeah.
It was inspiring. And
without a doubt.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And then, I mean, he's the reason you and I are talking right now.
100%. So
he's a special human being. I'm glad to, I'm grateful to have him in the network for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, whether you're talking about, you know, instrumental side, lyric side, top line side, or network side. Network wise, Derek is untouched right now. I mean, seriously. I mean, if you need anything, like if I said, "Hey, man, I need a dude with a trombone," he's like, "Oh, that's blah blah blah." He's over in Minnesota, cool guy. Da 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 da. You know, and it's, you know, give it all to Derek. But I mean, people are kind of working towards moving to collaborating more. I think people are set when they start music to kind of be against it. You know, they want to do everything by themselves and self-made and all this other stuff. And what I'll say to that is being self-made. And because I started music back in 2016, being self-made got me 10,000 streams on Spotify and a lot of wasted time. In a 4-year period, you know what I mean? And then look at the growth since I started collaborating. So, you know, I introduced the world to Different. So Different was introduced, and Old School Vibe was the first song on Different.
Wow.
So I went from 0 monthly listeners, and that song exploded. But I mean, like, just because of collaborating, I was able to literally, in 2 years, this massive growth, you know, when I was doing it by myself, nothing. I mean, literally nothing. I was paying for playlisters, mm-hmm. you know, that on those, you know, sketchy ads and stuff.
Yep.
I was doing that. I wasn't doing anything. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think the worst part about it is I was alone.
Yeah.
And in my own, you know, failures, I was just sitting there by myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like
I think it might be a natural process just in that story arc of developing into a musician, because maybe you needed those 2 years alone to really develop yeah. yourself into a spot where then you can deliver a track as beautiful as and as catchy and as professional as old school vibe. So maybe not wasted time, but maybe you could have known that a year earlier. That
You know what? I'll say this on this because I'll take that back. So. It's not, I wouldn't say wasted time. I think I would rather say I wasn't ready to work with people.
Mm.
Like I didn't build myself up enough as an artist to be able to hop behind a screen and say, I can get you a song that's dope. You know what I mean? If I were to work with people back in 2016, they would get nothing. I mean, they would get like mm-hmm. the super basics. You know what I mean? So I guess not wasted time, but I guess enough time to get ready because yeah. I didn't invest in myself until 2019 and, you know, bought this stuff, you know, thousands of dollars and all this stuff just so that I can sound professional. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like I've always been able to write, but can I translate that into a track that, you know, is ready to people yeah. at a certain caliber? You know what I mean?
Yep.
I think that's a better way to put it.
Yeah, well, and back to that, I mean, just back to that, I'm thinking back of like when I first dove into music. So when I really sold myself on music production, it would have been at the tail end of 2014 is when I bought Ableton. I remember like telling, I was, luckily I was confident enough yet naive enough to think that it was going to work and like just telling my friends of like, hey, I'm going to do this. And fortunately I was able to be persistent enough, to go with it, but I didn't, I similar to you, I thought I had to do it on my own. I thought, okay, I have to grind this out, figure it all out. And what I love about, this podcast and being able to share conversations with artists that have gone through this journey is for somebody that's in their first year, second year, maybe third year, whatever it is, listening to this, they can hopefully begin to suppress some of that ego and say, yeah. Oh, wait a second. This me doing it on my own is not the way. Like right. the work that you have to put in, the investment that you have to put in yourself, that's on you for sure. The work is 100%. Always on you. But you can build a team. Like if you compare it to like football, right? Like I'm on multiple different football teams. And then right. let's say the same team we're on, like Derek's the quarterback and we're wide receivers, right? Or maybe I'm a wide receiver. You're a running back is probably more accurate, but I love my role on that team. And then when I think about like my other teams for Dreamfield or Summit One or Crystal Grid or the podcast, it's like, okay, well, what's my position? But then let's say like if I'm the quarterback on one of these teams, how do I, who do I throw it to in this particular right. instance to keep ourselves moving forward? And, that's something that I didn't think about within my first 2 years of production. It took until after year two to
no for sure. And you're so narrow-minded too. I mean, I love the talking with new artists aspect of you know what I do when it comes to top lining, because everybody is so focused on one song. That's it. You know, I'm gonna make this one song, and everybody gets in that mindset when they first start. I'm gonna make the one song. And that one song is going to go from here to 50 million streams overnight. And it's all about this one song. It's so simple. Why isn't anybody doing this? Like everybody should be doing this. It's that one song mentality that I think kills young artists because they put so much emotional weight into the one song mentality. So when that one song gets 2,000 streams after a year, mm-hmm. you know, it's emotional. You know yeah. what I mean? It's like, I thought this song was super dope, but I guess it's not dope. Maybe I'm just not paying enough for playlisting and mm-hmm. maybe it's just not getting in front of people. But, you know, and I'll go off of two things. Old School Vibe, organic. I'll say this just in all honesty. So we did pay for playlisting in the beginning. The playlisting fell flat.
Mm.
It was 3 months. We were 160,000 streams for the amount of money undisclosed. That yeah. was low.
Yeah.
So I was like, damn. I was like, I really thought we had something. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like when you love a track yeah. so much, and especially an organically built track like this, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like we didn't, you know, buy a beat from BeatStars and mm-hmm. throw some vocals on it and lay it out there. You know, but this was our baby. We spent some time on this. So 3 months went by, 4 months went by. I think we got all the way down to like 200 listens a day. And that was emotional. But then after that, is when the good stuff started happening. So Discover Weekly picked us up.
Yep.
Radio picked us up. Distribute Discover Weekly is and I tell it to everybody, that is your one shot.
It's your
one opportunity. Spotify takes your track and delivers it to a group of people. It's like a test. It's like, hey, how well is this song gonna do to this little group? And so mm-hmm. depending on what that group does, Spotify will either say, well, let's do this again, or they'll take you off Discover Weekly.
Yeah.
So I got on Discover Weekly. Then all of a sudden, 600 listens a day, 800 yep. listens a day. And dude, it's been 2 years. We're still getting 3,000 streams a day.
Wow. Dude, and Chase, I've never actually asked. Like, I periodically go in and check just to see how it's doing. Like today, like it's up to, I think, 1.7 million, which yeah. is a solid number. I had no idea that Discover Weekly was carrying it forward. And we have a Crystal Grid tune, Fly Low, that's been carried by Discover Weekly for 3 years
yeah.
at this point, going on 3 years. And it's, yeah. I think it's like 12 to 1600 streams per day that Spotify has just been gifting us. And then sometimes it'll pop off and be like 3K and then drop down and then it'll kick back up in the algorithm. But I honestly had no idea that that Discover Weekly was driving Old School Vibe forward.
100%. Awesome. Discover Weekly is basically, you know, it's Spotify giving the track a chance. And, you know, people are like, how do I get on all these algorithms, blah, blah, blah. And I'll sum it up in one sentence. Your song has to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not good to you. It's yep. good to everybody in that distribution network. So Spotify is a smart company, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people look at Spotify nowadays almost like throwing it into the darkness and it just disappears. Spotify mm. works. It yeah. works. They know what they're doing. They want people listening on their platform. So mm-hmm. their whole job is just distribute new music.
Yeah.
And to distribute music that people want to listen to. So Discover Weekly is everything when it comes to a new track. You know, when it comes to successes and failures of a track, statistics are massive. Right. So you're looking for high stream rate, low listeners. Right. So 1.7 million on Old School Vibe, total listeners, 240,000. That's big.
Yep.
That's big. So that yep. listen rate, that's like five listens, yeah. five streams per person. Yep. You know, it's massive.
That is huge. And how many months did it take for Spotify to pick up Old School Vibe on Discover Weekly?
To get to the level that we are now, probably around 6-7 months. We had a lot of low months.
So with that's super interesting because with Fly Low, I think it was like a year and a half before Discover yeah. picked it up.
Right.
Yeah, it was like a full year and a half, and then all of a sudden it popped right. off. And I was like, whoa, that's interesting. And it just proves, I mean, the quality of Old School Vibe, man. Like it's
right.
the soul is there, and when people listen to it, they want to repeat it.
Right.
You know, and I'd listen right. to it probably like every couple of months. And
sure.
I don't listen to it once.
Right.
You know, I'm a loop it a few times.
No, it's a great track, and I think people give up on their tracks a little too soon. I think patience in this generation is just kind of dwindling a little bit.
Totally.
When you release a song, give it a chance. Like, you know what I mean? Like, don't give up on your kid that easily.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like let it do its thing. Like let it, you know, work for you. And, you know, 2 months go by, it's not getting anything. 3 months, that's okay. A year, that's okay. Dude, like, I mean, it's countless. I mean, Lucid Dreams by Juice WRLD was released on SoundCloud, I believe, in like 2015, 2016, 2017, but didn't pop off for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was the main song that he was known for a good minute. Give it a break. Like, give yourself a break and give your song a break and give it just a moment to, you know, really resonate. And, you know, it's a dual part. I'm not a big promoter on Instagram. Mm-hmm. My Instagram is me and my girl and my dog. And you know what I mean? When you look at my social stats, I'm not Derek. I'm not posting every day. I'm not out there. But then you look at my Spotify and it's like, oh, he does music. Yep. Like, you know what I mean? It's letting Spotify, let the algorithms work for you. Mm-hmm. But I mean, pay attention to your track and pay attention to the numbers and what's going on with it. You know, don't obsess with it, but you can understand a lot from Spotify. They have a great analytics department. You can understand what you're doing. And if you pay for playlisting, it can go both ways.
Yeah.
You know
what? Yeah. Well, and so Chase, early on in my earlier tracks, I felt extremely connected to my pieces of art, to my babies. But then over time, I was able to separate myself pretty well. But I'm also not singing on a track. And I have to imagine that singing on a track, it makes that track become so much more of a part of your identity. Like, even when I play the sax, like, yeah, it's my artistic creativity, but it's not, I don't know, man. Like, it's not ride or die. If I put out a dubstep tune,
right,
and it doesn't do well, it doesn't crush my soul. Same thing. If I put out a beat, it doesn't crush my soul if it doesn't do well. But I have to imagine, as a vocalist, like you going out there with your voice.
Yeah.
How has that kind of evolved over time for you?
Yeah. So it's, you know, I've always been lyric based. So when I come up with, you're absolutely correct. When a song doesn't do well, and when I'm writing it, you know, I hope vocalists share the same emotion that they get. I genuinely feel like dopamine release when I come up with great lyrics. And I sing into the mic, and like, if anybody sat in any of my sessions, you've seen it, because it's like, oh my gosh, like that was dope. Like that, it all makes sense. Like it flows. It's not cheesy. Like it's cool.
Yep.
Like that's great. And like, sometimes I'll just sit, like I'll be done with the take and I'll just keep doing it. I'll just keep doing it because I think it's so dope. So yeah, when I release something like that and, you know, it falls flat, you know, it's kind of like a little ego check a little bit. It's like, dang, like I thought this was really cool. You know what I mean? Like I thought these lyrics were really, like, you know, being able to resonate with them. I think, you know, they painted a picture, a storyline. So I mean, for sure. But I think the main mindset that I grew into is on to the next.
Totally.
On to the next. You know, it's a great song. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't stop working on music and just pay attention to old school vibe. You know, that was when I really gripped what I wanted to do with different. And I really expanded on top lining. And, you know, all these artists started reaching out to me. And I'm like, oh, I'm like, people need songs.
People can't
write songs. Like, oh my gosh, I can write songs. Dude, it was revolutionary. I was like, you know, and now I'm at the level right now. Like, dude, I just did 20 tracks in like 5 days.
Whoa.
And yeah. And you know, I found out that people can't do that, but I've been doing stuff like that. You know what I mean? I used to run myself through drills and, you know, I used to go on BeatStar, just click on a random beat and do a song. Go to the next one, do a song. do the next one, do a song, freestyle. Let's get some ideas going, because I never wanted to be in a box. I never wanted to be one genre. Different was supposed to be completely different. If I'm being honest, he was supposed to never have a genre ever. And then EDM came and top lining came, and then, you know, once that was monetized, different was gone. Different is out of my hands. Different is the artist for the people. And that's it, you know?
Yeah. Well, dude, I want to dive into this process, like 20 tracks in 5 days, like walk us through, how are you staying on top of a workload that intense, keeping yourself creatively fresh? Like what walk us through a day in the life of Chase and your typical work day.
For sure. So whenever I get a project, you know, EDM might sound like it's the same when you listen to it a lot, but every instrumental is different. And my process is a little like hipster, but this is what it is. And it's always been like this. So every single time I get a project, even whether it's one track or whether it's 20, I load them all up in Pro Tools, right? Take them to the top, get everything organized. I have my work spot. I start listening to the track, and I start with the record button on, and I start just humming, just singing along. And then I wait for words to pop in my head that the instrumental has told me to say. Mm. I believe that every instrumental has something to say. Yeah. The emotion, the drive, whether it's a, you know, a party song or it's an emotional song, I feel like the words are embedded in the instrumental.
I love that.
I feel like they're really in there. So when I'm recording, I hear something like either from, you know, a bass note or a key, and I'm like, ooh, this is what you want. Like right here. So I'll build on that idea, and then I'll keep going until it's right, until it fits 100% with the track. Because I never take songs. I know some artists that like have like pre-recorded or pre-written songs, mm-hmm. and they'll take them into sessions and then try to apply them. Yeah. So they're only going to be 50%, you know, on the track. Even if it fits, I can make anything fit. But is that what the track wanted to be?
Yeah.
Is that what you wanted, you know, like to be on the track? And so my process is simply that. I listen to what the instrumental wants to be, and then I go from there. I always start at either the pre-drop or the hook, mm-hmm. because I'm a full believer in don't bore us, get to the chorus. You can get a great pre-hook, a great chorus, and you already know the song is going to be dope.
Yep.
Everybody remembers Hello by Adele for one reason. That freaking extension on the vocal and that entire chorus and the emotion playing in the instrumental gives me chills right now, literally.
Yep.
Like, it's that we aim for. And if you're a songwriter that is just trying to just apply lyrics to a track, like I know people that have writing sessions without music, that's fine. Like, you know, like I used to do poetry. That's how I, you know, kind of got into songwriting. But no, my process is simplistic, and I listen to what the instrumental wants to be. We go from there, and we see what happens.
I love the way that you described that process. And I was listening to a podcast yesterday. I think it was Ryan Holiday's The Daily Stoic podcast with Stephen Pressfield, and I read Stephen Pressfield every single morning. I cycle through like 5 of his books. And yesterday he was kind of describing that process. And he comes from the writing perspective, but I mean you're writing in those moments as well. But he envisions it as him being like a coal miner. And he has one of the headlamps on, and he's going into this cave, and like the book is there, the words are there. He just has to go around and like and chip away until it's there. And you just described that process in pretty much the exact same way, man. And is there anything that you do to get yourself in that frame of mind? Is there any process you do before going into those sessions to help boost the efficiency of that process?
No, without a doubt. I do a thing called clear the ear. So before a massive undertaking like 20 tracks, I don't listen to any music. No music at all. I'm just like you, you know, in terms of like going on hikes, you know, getting out of the studio, breathing. But yeah, the problem that I encountered, you know, a couple of years ago when I was doing some projects is I found myself connecting with a song that I just listened to and then bringing it into the session unconsciously.
Yep.
And so I'm like, wait, I've heard that lyric before. And then I'm like, oh, that's Quinn 92. Okay, yep. Cool. Like, you know what I mean?
I just took that, didn't I? Yeah.
Like, yeah. Like I just did copyright infringement. That's dope. Yeah. So yeah. So any project like that, I'm driving in the car in silence.
Yeah.
Like I don't want to hear any music whatsoever because I don't want to unconsciously, you know, take somebody else's idea and bring it into a session, especially when you're writing 20 songs in 5 days. You know, it's supposed to be real quick, real quick. So you're talking about getting tracks done in like 45 minutes. Boom, 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 boom. So you want to be fresh. You want your mind completely open, like a blank chalkboard. And you want to go in there and hear it and then instantly draw from the ideas from the tracks and leave the world outside of that. It's just about that song at that point. But yeah, clearing the ear, I think is the most important thing. If you're a top liner, you know, songwriter or a beat maker, you don't want to be like everybody else. You don't want to be copying trends. You know, it might sound dope, but you don't want anything that anybody's doing right now. You know?
I love that concept of clear the ear. And I feel like sometimes I feel fortunate to be able to jump between creating electronic music and then creating lo-fi beats, chill hop, because it I feel like I get to separate those artistic processes so differently. And it makes sense too. Like if I go out for a run or if I'm working out, like it's going to be electronic music. If I'm chilling, meditating, it's going to be lo-fi. So I feel like I get to weave in and out of those two aspects of my personality, like the go hard guy and the, okay, let's take a breather and recenter myself. And, but I do, it's funny. Like if I'm going for a run, I like to habit stack and be like, if I'm going to be out there running for 2 hours, it's like, okay, well, how can I also be productive with this time? And so I'll review albums or listen to a heavy dubstep mix. Sometimes I'll just listen to a podcast, but every once in a while, and I should probably do this more often, I do it in silence, which is hard, which sucks. But there's so much benefit to doing that. I should do that more often because that's a challenge in itself too. Of like, okay, well let's just listen to the mind talk for a little bit and see what pops up.
So like I was in a serious artistic rut a month ago, and I live in Arizona, and you got this one hike called Camelback Mountain. It's pretty tough. It's like it's double black diamond, but it's a tough hike. And so I was like, you know, I told the wife, I was like, I gotta go and, you know, hike this mountain. And she's like, okay. She's like, be safe. And so I went and I started with my earphones in and I like started to like listen to my breathing and the music at the same time. And I just took them out and it was the hardest hike I've ever been on.
Yep.
Just in silence. Because not only is your mind not preoccupied, your mind is just there. It's stop, keep going, take a break, turn back. You know,
just quit,
why
Chase.
Are we out here?
Yeah, just
right.
Quit, man. Why? It's hot outside.
What are we doing? Like, why are we up here? Yeah. Like, we're hungry as hell. Like, we need to go. We need to turn back. You know, it's like, and I think that's super crucial because, like, you know, you don't really get in tune with yourself unless you're challenging yourself to do something. Totally. And it's literally just your voices on your shoulders, like saying, hey, like, okay, we get it. We'll start thinking better. Can we turn back? Like, can we go? It's like, we're, You know, it's a hard thing to do, doing things in silence, because you're fully in that moment. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't like being in the moment by themselves without anybody around. Yeah. You know, but I'll tell you what, that hike did it for me. I was mm-hmm. like, you know, got to the top and, you know, was just looking around and just breathing heavy. And I was like, that wasn't so bad.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a 2.5 mile hike, like up and yep. down. Like it's aggressive. But no, definitely needed because it totally just erased like my block. Cause you know, I'm sitting here thinking about what I'm doing wrong. I'm not talking to myself. I'm not communicating mm-hmm. with myself. I'm not, you know, processing situations. You know, to just put yourself in a moment where you have nothing to do but be with yourself, I think is super important. Super yeah. important.
Well, and I love that aspect of going out on this physical excursion and completing it is what was able to get you back on track. And especially with mm-hmm. with the amount of conversations we have around self-care, which is important, I feel like it leans towards the relaxation piece a lot in more instances than it should. It's like, well, self-care is sometimes doing something hard. and once again, I'm biased. Doing something hard every day is like what keeps me on track. I have to.
Right.
But I think it is crucial for everybody of like, well, like when's the last time you pushed yourself to your physical limits? And for a lot right. of people, it's probably been a long time. Like maybe since like high school athletics.
For sure.
It's like, go out there and like see if you can break your mind. Cause it's right. a good place to get to.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, like I think that, you know, pushing yourself to the moment where you think about quitting is a good start. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, I think it translates into the studio 100%.
Oh yeah.
Because when you're coming up with something and it's hard, are you going to give up? Or are you going to focus the hell up and drive through it? Mm-hmm. You know? And I think it's just so metaphorical, you know, when, you know, whether it's a hike, working out or anything, you don't have to be like going nuts. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, you don't have to like listen to influencers and go nuts and, you know, get up at 4:30. I know you get up super early.
Yeah.
I know you do. See, but like, I get up at 7. That's a reasonable time for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had the workout in a little bit later in the day, but it's like, look at me. Like, I mean, I work out, but I'm not, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not like jacked up,
yeah.
like ready to get it. I do it because, you know, it's good for you. Mm-hmm. Like it's totally good for your, it's good for your mind. It's good for your body, to just get you in like a different, you know, set of mind. When I'm done working out, it's almost, you know, I completed a task.
Yep.
You know, I feel good about that. You know, that wasn't an easy thing, but I did it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, definitely super important. And it does translate when it comes to mental health and your music. It's 100%. I know when I'm doing yep. bad, when all the lyrics that I'm coming up with are just like emotional as hell.
Yep.
Like I'm like, oh, this is what's in my mind right now. Like yep. this is all pouring out. Mm-hmm. It's really bad when like I hear like a party song and I'm trying to make it like a sad song.
Sad. Like, yep. You're like, that's not what this song's. That, like, it doesn't want me to say that.
Yeah,
that's
no,
brain.
I'm like,
that's not the song.
100%. 100%. And that's when I know like I need to reset because right now I'm trying to just do, you know, whatever I want. That's not the process. That's not yeah. how
we
do it.
Well, and I love what you said about doing like it doesn't have to be insane. And I hope I do, especially in the podcast. I mean, on the stories, it could probably be interpreted differently, but hopefully through the podcast, people understand that they don't need to do what I do. I need to do what I do because I have to. Like that. That's just me.
Right.
That's just the level at which I have to go for me to feel good.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be that. It can be a 10-minute jog. It can be a 15-minute lift. It can be 50 push-ups.
Right.
Just something. And I feel like, especially when I talk to people and like a lot of us go through mental health issues at varying degrees, right?
And yeah,
but some, like, if we're diving deep into it, it's like, well, what's your physical activity level looking like? And they're like,
right,
nothing. And I'm like, well, just do a little, like, just try. And some people are adverse to that, which I always want to just, like, shake them and just, like, just try it. just get outside and do a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's literally, it's about completing a goal. You set a goal, you complete a goal, and it's not an unrealistic goal. I'm not saying I'm going to do 2,000 push-ups today. I'm just going to do 50. And I said I was going to do it. I did it, and boom, here I am. You know what I mean? And I think it's good for the mind. It's good to win. You know, it's good to, you know, complete something. Like, if I would have turned back on that mountain, I would have been super disappointed in myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I would have tried to coax it. Well, at least we got outside. At least we, you know, but no, it's like, I did it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I felt it the next day, but I mean, like, I did it, you know what I mean? Like, nobody likes the story. And in any case where it's like, oh, he almost won.
Yeah, almost.
Like, it's like, oh, he did it. Like, he went halfway and turned back, you know, and it's, break it down, simplify it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you're nuts. Like, I see your miles. No, thank you. No, thank you. I can run like 2 miles and that's it. I used to, it's funny because, you know, thinking back at like younger Chase, when we used to do like the mile test in high school, you know, I was on the second lap of my mile out of 4 miles. And I remember distinctively saying to myself, we could fall down right now and go home. we could trip. That's a reasonable thing to do. We could trip right now. I was like, we'll be playing Gears of War by like 12:30.
I'm out.
It's just crazy. Like, at the moment, I didn't identify with that voice. That voice just kind of went in and out. You know what I mean? But it's like, I recognize that voice now. That voice is yourself trying to quit on yourself. Yeah. And that's with everything. You know what I mean? It's like, I'll be trying to record a song and it's like, dude, you suck.
Like, yeah, totally, man. Totally.
What are you doing? And sometimes I vocalize it. Like, my wife laughs because when I'm in here and I am my, like, number one consultant, motivator, you know, I'm everything. So, like, if I'm on a verse for, like, more than 30 seconds, I literally will stop it. And I'm like, what are we doing in here? Should we walk out? Are we done? Like, are we done for the day? Like, should I turn up the autotune? Will the autotune help you? Like, I yell at myself. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, are you okay? Mm-hmm. And I think, and I say that because that voice is kind of needed. It's saying like, it's giving you a choice and then you're overcoming that choice.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, small wins, that's all people need to go for. And, you know, it absolutely does translate into the music world. This is a very, very, if you let it, it's a very dark industry to be in. It is dark. It is mentally tasking. You know, you have not only yourself, but you have the world, close friends, family watching at you. You're guilty of being a failure. 100%. Nobody believes in you. Nobody cares, you know, and you're sitting here trying to fight, you know, everybody off like, well, listen to this. I did this. And that's why you pay for playlisting. And that's why you do all this, because you want the numbers to go to your family and be like, look, you know. Yep. And that's, you have to keep in check. You have to keep your mind in check. And number one, you never have to lose track of the fact that you're doing it for yourself and not anybody else.
Yeah.
Because this is a selfish, I'm one to say, and I'll just say it, this is a selfish journey for myself.
Yeah.
100%. I love music. I love creating music. I love writing. And, you know, I tell people all the time, because people are like, Old School Vibe is so dope, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know, I listen all the time. And I'm like, that's cool.
Yeah. Like, cool.
Like, I wrote that for me. Like, but I'm really glad that you loved it. Like, that's excellent. But I enjoy fulfillment listening to my music and thinking, wow, like, this is great.
You're so right, man. It is a selfish journey. And God, I've been with my girlfriend for 8 years at this point. And I remember her and I first started dating around the same time that I first dove into production. And just as an example of how selfish I was, I was months into production. Maybe let's just say I was 5 or 6 months into production. Like I literally told her, I was like, this is my number one. Like nothing about our relationship can affect our number one. And I'm just lucky that she's my best friend. And here we are, you know, 8 years later. But that shows how selfish it was. And obviously there's still a little bit more give and take, but honestly, not really at the same time, you know, like she knows this is, this is my space and this is what I do. And of course I try to be a good human and she's been with me for a long time. So I must be doing okay on the relationship side. 100%.
Yeah. I was lucky enough to meet my wife on The Voice. So she's a vocalist and so her dad's in a band, you know, it's a massive thing in the family.
Oh, perfect.
So, you know, like this Saturday, like she really wants to get into like voiceover work and, you know, big Disney fan, massive Disney fan.
Yeah.
Me, not so much, but I worked at Disney World at one point. But
nice.
But no, she wants to get into it and she is fucking God. I mean, like she's like 5'90", has the voice of just like an opera singer. Like she pushes and it's incredible. Yep. It literally is incredible. But no, it's definitely that symmetry there. But I mean, you know, you do it for yourself. And I think I'll say this, and I think this is the most important to say to any new artist, don't do it for the money.
Oh, totally.
If you do it for the money, I promise you, you will fail. 100%. So like I'm at a point in my career where, you know, I can call it a career. Yeah. Like I've found a way to monetize it and that's super cool. But if that money went away, I'm okay. I'm all right. I still got that, you know, I still got that keyboard back there. I'm still going to be doing exactly what I'm doing right now. I've just been lucky enough to grow up, you know, and literally grow up because I didn't always have this mindset of do what you love and then the money will come. Like don't chase the money though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've never hit anybody up on Instagram asking if they need a top line. Never. I've never reached out for clients or anything like that. They've all come to me. Yeah. And it's cool. And I don't do all the projects. You know, somebody will come to me and be like, hey, I want you on the song. I'll listen to the song. I don't want to be on it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, could I spend that $400? Absolutely. You know what I mean? But am I going to like ruin, like, you know, why I do this for $400 just so I can top line on a track that sounds like a trash can banging together?
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that, but no, it's massively important. Massively, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it's and the money's not going to come for a while. And I think in that story arc where you're grinding for the dream, whatever the dream is, at some point it transitions into the calling of like, oh, wait a second. I wake up and do this because I have to. It's just what I have to do. And having trust in that and not questioning that. It is super important while sometimes being savvy in business and marketing and like, oh, okay, well, what are these opportunities for monetization or trust in the process enough where the opportunities for monetization just happen.
Which
is the case sometimes. And it's, I don't know, man, the older I get, the further along I get, the more I believe that they're like, think whatever's supposed to happen is supposed to happen. And now that doesn't change the intensity at which I try to live every single day. My overarching goal is to live my life as a full-time musician. I don't have a number set on monetary value right now. My bills are as low as they're ever going to be in my entire life. So I'm lucky in that sense. But literally that's my goal. And I wake up and it's like, okay, well, how can I organize my day in a way that makes that as possible as it can be? But I also believe in hard work for sure. And I can already get that. Like, somebody doesn't crank out 20 tracks in 5 days unless they're a hard worker, man. And I think sometimes that's like inherently instilled in personality. Sometimes it's a learned trait. It's most likely a fair mixture of both. But in regards to work ethic, kind of what's your stance on that in regards to work ethic and artists?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you want this, if you really want this, and I talk to people all the time, and I know if they want it, like right off the bat, number one, do you have another job? How are you supplementing yourself? I've been a server in a restaurant for 11 years. I don't say this as a cocky man. I say this because I think it's good to be transparent. I'm coming up on 50K this year on top lining alone.
Right? Nice.
A lot of people would step aside and say, that's enough. It's not enough for me. I got big dreams. I want to build houses. You know, I want to do all this stuff with my wife. I want to travel. I want to do all this stuff. And I can't just sit in here. I can't just do, you know, music. Now, that did not come overnight. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like back in 2019, 2019, 2020, when Derek reached out to me and then connected me with this artist who introduced me to this platform. And I was like, oh my God, I can make money doing this. I did projects for $50.
Yeah.
I did projects for $100. I did one project for $25.
Yep.
I thought it was cool as hell that I could go to a basement, sing into a mic and make $25. Yep. I think that's legendary. I wanted to run upstairs and tell my dad, like, I just made money doing music. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? But dude, I did not get to the place that I am right now without reinvesting in myself and sourcing that serving job to pay for the, you know, equipment that I needed. I didn't go fancy with it. There's still stuff that I don't even know how to use that I have. Like, I have Omnisphere. Why? I'm not a beat maker.
Yeah.
I have it. Yeah. I have it. I thought that Omnisphere was going to have a lot more piano plugins, but it didn't. And so I bought Keyscape right after that. Like, you know what I mean? Omnisphere is not cheap. Yeah. But no, you have to reinvest in yourself. And number one, you have to love what you're doing. So you need to work with people on music that you like doing. And you need to take the lower jobs. Don't ever think that you're worth more. You are worth as much as people will pay for you. That's it.
Yep.
There was a time when I was worth 25. There was a time where I was worth 1500 a song.
Mm-hmm.
There's a time, but it's all about what people are willing to pay. And you have to work. You have to work and you have to work. You have to work to gain enough momentum to where people are going to reach out to you. That 20 song project, I think it's super notable. Because that 20-song project started out as one project for $350. And at the time, you know, I had a release coming up on Chill Jam. You know, I had a release coming up on Tough Stuff Music and all this stuff. And I was getting, like, really big-headed. And I was like, $350, I'm not doing a song for less than, you know, $650. Like, blah, blah, blah. But that day, I said, you know what? I absolutely will do this 100%. I like the song. We'll do it. So I did that song for $350. That was last year. $350 turned into 5 songs a month. Turned into 10 songs a month at $350.
Mm-hmm.
Turned into 20 songs a month for $350.
Yep.
That's starting off low, connecting with other producers, keeping a relationship, massive relationship builder. Love relationships. Producers, y'all are my best friends.
Yep.
Because I want the same thing you want. You know what I mean? It's the exact same vision. And so it's building those relationships, keeping yourself realistic, right? But building on yourself, continuing to invest in yourself. I don't really believe in the necessary struggling artist. I don't think you need to struggle to make good music. I think you need to have experiences in your life and draw from those experiences, but you got to eat. You got to pay rent. You gotta be able to go out to dinner, whether it's Applebee's or the Ritz-Carlton. You have to be able to do other things in your life and then add music into your life. Don't make everything so serious of, you know, oh, if I don't do 5 songs this month, I'm not going to pay rent.
Yep.
No. Go get yourself a part-time job. Serving is great. I highly recommend serving. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But no, it's a step-by-step process. And it takes years. I mean, you said it. You don't start right away. 6 years. It took me 6 years to monetize.
Yep.
Like, to the point where I'm like, you know, I can, you know, be like, yeah, I'm a professional top liner. I have this status now. Yep. But oh my God, did it not happen overnight? And failed projects. Producers that were just complicated. The mental aspect of it, of well, now I'm making money, so how do I keep doing that? And you know, it's all about, and my one word to new artists: learn how to monetize in what you want to do, and then try to branch that out 5 times. I do it like this, and every time I'm on a Zoom call with an artist, I'll do this. People think that monetization is like this. Some people think it's like this. So you can do this or you can do this, and that's how you make money. I implore you to develop yourself mentally and to think outside of the box, to not do this, but to do this.
Yeah.
You want this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you've got stuff going on. You know, recording nature and these sample packs are good. It's fucking legend. It's legendary to me. I can't even like hold back it's legendary. Oh my gosh. Like,
thanks, man.
How freaking cool is that?
It's pretty awesome.
It's the dopest thing ever. You get to go on a beautiful hike, get out of the world, and then record these unique samples. Are you shitting me, Cody? That's like the dopest way to monetize music I think I've ever seen in my entire life.
Well, and in taking what you just suggested, it was looking at all of the different areas of my life that I love. And so it's like, okay, well, I love running mountains. I love hiking mountains. It doesn't necessarily complement my music career. Or does it? What happens if I take a Zoom recorder up here? It's like, oh, okay, well, I get to capture these beautiful images, but then I also get to capture the memory through sound. Oh, and then I can also sell these memories as sample packs. So it was following that same process of trying to think outside of the box and looking at all of my different passions. And it's okay, I don't want to be wasting time, but how can I build a life where I'm continuously moving forward in all the things that I love to do? Like, I don't have to run ultra marathons to do what I do in music, but I love it. You know, there's something about it that's another calling where it's just, I have to do it. I have to get to that point to like break my mind, to break my spirit, for whatever weird personal mental fetish that exists within that. I have to do it. And it's like, well, but how can I infuse that into my artistic brand? Is there anything I can learn from that? And it's like, oh, well, in those training runs, I can create sample packs. So it took me a long time to figure that out. And I felt like I was going in two different directions of like, what, like, I'm not a professional athlete, but I want to be a professional musician. But it's like, oh,
right.
Well, okay. I'll try and start infusing these.
Right. And for the people who don't see us, I'm holding up one finger, two fingers, and then I'm holding up both my hands. Extend them as far away from your face and look at all the avenues that you need to get. Because in order to make a career in music, I'm reading a book right now. It's called Making It in the New Music Business. But one of the most brilliant things that I read, because it's such a realistic book, is you know, you will always be artist/something. You'll be artist/server, artist/dishwasher, artist/communication major, artist/MBA. You know, you're always going to be doing something else until you learn that monetization is not a two road. It's like a 10 road. You have to be reaching out. You have to be creative. Like, yours is by far the most creative ways that I've ever seen anybody monetize music. I mean, seriously, I mean, it's like I tell people about you. I'm like,
thanks, man.
I talk to my artist and I'm like, listen, this dude is going on hikes and recording nature. I was like, would you ever think of doing that? It's like, no. It's like, you can do everything. And like, I've got my own ways. You know, it's 2022. So you can do whatever you want. And there's a lot of things that people don't know that you can make money. And I don't care whatsoever giving out those secrets. You ready? Sample packs, overhead sync licensing. There's companies in Spain and there's companies in Poland that literally pay you for royalty-free music because stores and restaurants are tired of paying mainstream artists. So you can get some money that way. Obviously, Spotify revenue is a little bit down there, but you can keep pumping out tracks. Not a one-track mindset, but keep doing that. Top lines are going to be your main bread and butter, working with artists like that, and then mentoring other artists.
Mm-hmm.
If you get to a certain level, like I'm at a certain level, so I'm my website's going live next month. We're doing classes, baby.
Great, dude.
We're getting people, and what the best part about those classes is, guaranteed jobs at the end of that class. If I give you a stamp of approval, I will get you in touch with this company. I've already got their approval. You will make your money back plus $250.
Yep.
Right away, baby.
Yep.
Like, let's get you moving. Let's expand your mindset on some things. Stop thinking in the terms of Spotify playlist and you know, performing on stage, because those are other outlets as well. You could perform. You could do bar scenes and weddings and all sorts of stuff. A lot of ways you can do it. But I think the main part is exactly what you said a little bit earlier. It's going to take some work.
Yep.
You're going to have to invest in yourself so much. And it's not just money, it's time. Learning how to use Pro Tools. Pro Tools is my bread and butter, but that's just because in every studio that I ever went to in Atlanta, it was Pro Tools. Yep. And I'm looking and I'm learning. I'm learning everything and I'm talking with people. How did you do that? Wait, show me that. Could I do that just real quick?
Yeah.
You know, it's a process, man.
Well, and I love the approach that you're taking towards mentorship as well, because we started this conversation off. It's talking about our, you and I both had those two lost years that were potentially necessary, but there's some cheat codes that that could have been available to us if we had the right mentor.
And oh, yeah.
Even if you're only 2 years ahead of another artist, well, you have 2 years of knowledge. 2 years of cheat codes that you can share. And I think that's extremely viable. And it's the same process as buying a book, right? Somebody will buy a book to invest in themselves. Like, well, what if you pay that same amount of money or double that amount of money for a coach for 2 months? What value are you going to get out of that? So, Chase, I'm excited to see the website launch, man. And I'm excited to see what you're doing with other artists. And I think this was a very inspirational note to end this episode on.
Absolutely.
I'm so pumped that we finally did this, man.
Dude, for real.
Let's make you a regular guest, man. Let's get you back on in a couple of months, see what you're doing, see what you've learned. And I'm excited to see this website and hear about this mentorship program.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm hype about this. I can't believe we haven't had a conversation like this, you know, in the past 2 years. It's like I know you and I follow you and I'm all about everything that you're doing. And I'm just like peeking from the gallery, like, what's Cody doing right now?
Yeah. Hey, well, we're going to do this often, man. I have another podcast called High Performance Producer Podcast with my homie Jared from New Jersey. You'd be a perfect guest for that one as well. I love the mindset. I love the clarity. I love the, I love the way that you're looking at this career and looking at this life and your ability to break it down. And, as far as that hand gesture in regards to revenue streams, I might be jacking that.
Dude, jack it.
I love the way you describe that, man.
Jack it. It's keys to success. And you know, it's literally just doing it and finding out, getting the education. I think you and I both are on that educational side of you gotta do stuff. You gotta learn. You gotta keep moving forward. And I'm so glad I'm on here, and any other podcast that I'm on, let's do it. I'm freaking
ready. Do it, man. Everybody tuning in, as always, thanks for listening. I'll put your Instagram in the description. So everybody tuning in right now, just click that link, give them a follow. get some top lines, listen to Old School Vibe. You'll be blown away. Until next time, peace.